Now, these platforms use the same psychological tactics and triggers as gambling apps and casinos do. You know, for a lot of people, it's just not a hobby anymore. It's become a high-speed cycle of chasing, spending, justifying, and regretting. I had all of these cards and all of these sneakers too. For some sick reason, I felt like I had earned those to get from Jersey City to Staten Island and back on a Friday night. I had lost like 10 grand playing blackjack. It's disgusting to think back.
Today's podcast guest is Alex Efron, and he shares his story of gambling addiction, but also specifically his story of getting addicted to collecting, whether that be trading cards or other things. But before we dive into his story, I have just one favor to ask from you. There's so many of you that watch this channel regularly, but aren't yet subscribed. If you would do me the honor of hitting that subscribe button, then my promise to you is that I'm going to continue to work hard each and every day to spread the message that gambling addiction is real. You ended up with a gambling addiction, a gambling problem. Do you want to tell us like kind of how it reached that point?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm 35. I have been a sports fan my entire life, and gambling has become mainstream, right? So we see it everywhere. It's sort of baked into our day-to-day, our lifestyles, especially as sports fans. You see casino and sportsbooks ads everywhere you go, friends talking about it, you know, fellow fans talking about it, you even hear it in the workplace. And it's just become more and more, you know, popular and mainstream. And so probably date back to, I don't know, 2016, 2017, when apps like DraftKings and FanDuel started to become more popular in, you know, amongst sports fans. I was kind of dipping my toe and just exploring what it was like to place a bet on a game. You know, I enjoyed it. It made watching a game that much more exciting when you had some stake in it. And so what started as something that was really lighthearted and not that serious started to spiral. I've been a collector my whole life. I collect sneakers, sports cards, memorabilia, you name it. I've been involved in it in some capacity. And so that paired with the option of being able to make money through, you know, basically your knowledge in sports, just it was very attractive to me and something I got heavily involved in. And as time went on, I got more and more sucked in and, you know, was making money from bets and then taking that money and spending it on a pair of sneakers or a box of sports cards. And this sort of vicious cycle started to really spiral. And, you know, fast forward to the pandemic, I got really involved in the sports card hobby and community. I started breaking. If you're not familiar with breaking, it's this concept of community opening up a box of cards so that everybody can get a little piece. The prices of a box of cards is absolutely astronomical compared to what it used to be. And so in order to be involved, in order to, you know, maybe hit a card that you're looking for, you can participate in, again, what's called a card break, where you're assigned a specific team or a player or a parallel or something of that nature, where you could you know, obtain one of or a handful of cards from a box amongst other people that are also participating. And so I was introduced to that. I was actually breaking. I was on the breaking side and I got really into it, you know, really enjoyed the whole experience and the community and meeting new people and, you know, being involved with, you know, an experience that was rooted in nostalgia, something that I enjoyed as a kid. Grew up in the 90s, so of course, you know, sports cards and Pokemon and things of that nature were always really, really exciting for me. And so, you know, it just kind of became more and more of an addiction over, you know, a relatively short period of time. And fast forward a year, year and a half, I was spending so much money on cards and breaks and the chase, the dopamine rush, which is ultimately what I was subconsciously after. And so that paired with the gambling, I started to play blackjack, specifically live blackjack on live casinos within, you know, apps on your phone. Mm-hmm. And again, it was this vicious cycle where I needed that immediate fix. I needed that, you know, that quick hit. and I would join a break. You know, these breaks, again, astronomical. You can join high-end breaks that cost thousands of dollars. I'd be after, really? You know, a card. And whether or not I hit or not, I still wanted to recoup the money. So I would hop on the blackjack and try to win it back. And at one point, I thought I was this, you know, expert blackjack player. And it got ugly really, really quickly. You know, I found myself going down a very dark path. It was a very slippery slope. Obviously, there are ebbs and flows to addiction, and there were times where I was up a lot of money. There were other times where I was down a lot of money, and I felt like I had hit rock bottom. And so there were a few instances in particular that I can recall that led me to acknowledging that I had a problem. And so I started to go to Gamblers Anonymous meetings. I also sought outpatient treatment through a recovery program that I know you know very well, Right Choice Recovery, led by Rob Sackowitz. I did that for several months, along with the Gamblers Anonymous meetings. I attended therapy, I had a psychiatrist, therapist, all these things to try to rewire my brain and figure out the root cause of all of this. And a huge part of the problem for me was that it wasn't necessarily the gambling that I was addicted to. It was really just the chase. I just, you know, had this inherent desire to obtain something that was hard to obtain. I know that's hard to sort of articulate, but it was always about like the exclusive pair of sneakers or that card that everybody's talking about, whether it be an athlete like Cooper Flagg or Caitlin Clark or Victor Wembanyama that's like really hyped and everybody's excited about. You know, I always wanted to sort of be at the center of that conversation and be involved in some capacity. And so there's a lot of FOMO sort of baked into this, and the hype and again, the dopamine and the chase, the rush, all of these things, like, you know, just made my brain go nuts. And that's what led me to, you know, the place I'm in today, which is a recovering gambling addict, and ultimately led me to found a mission-based platform called Collectors MD. And that's what I'm excited to talk about today with you.
Just before we dive into what Collectors MD is all about, you had mentioned that there was a couple of instances that you can remember that really got you to wake up and pursue recovery. Would you be comfortable sharing one of them just to kind of illustrate it for the audience? Like, what was it that got you to realize that this chase for the big hit, this chase for the next rare item was actually leading you down a bad path?
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say in the first couple of years of being involved with the sports cards and really, really just kind of spiraling with the blackjack and the gambling, I was spending an extremely high volume on the sports cards to the point where I had these cases filled to the brim of just high-end cards. I'm not talking about just base cards. I'm talking about autographs, one-of-ones, just ultra-modern high-end cards that were each individually worth a ton of money. And so in order to obtain them, I was, you know, not just working my full-time job, which, you know, all in all was pretty successful in, but I was also gambling. So I could earn this sort of additional disposable income that I can then spend on the cards. And so I was doing pretty well for quite some time. At one point, you know, I know we always talk about that the amount of money is relative. Everybody's situation is unique. And so $100,000 to one person might not be the same to another, right? But at one point I was up six figures just from gambling and was collecting and was enjoying myself and was just sort of living life in the fast lane. This was actually the summer of 2022, right before I got married. I got married in November of 2022. And so that summer I was just cruising. I was winning. I was buying whatever I wanted and it was great. I was enjoying myself. And so fast forward to the end of that summer, I would say around September, I started to hit a wall and I would lose quite a bit. You know, that those losses started to really accumulate and I ended up losing everything I had won that summer and then some. And I started to spend money that I couldn't afford to spend. I had been saving up for my wedding. You know, I had my portion to contribute and I started to dip into that. It got to a point where all of the money I had saved for this wedding was depleted. And the wedding was like a month away and I was at a loss. I was just, you know, beside myself. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to handle it. And so I went to my parents and explained to them the situation. This was the first time I had ever admitted to them that I had a gambling problem. I was afraid to talk to my wife about it. I was afraid to acknowledged that I had a problem and that, you know, we were in a dark place. And my parents basically told me, they were like, look, you know, we'll help you, but you also have to figure out a solution here. And so they were ready, they were getting ready to like pull from their retirement savings and make sure that this wedding happened, because there was a lot on the line. We had a lot of guests coming, and they obviously, you know, wanted to help as much as they could. My in-laws were already helping more than I could ever have asked. I mean, they were basically covering the majority of the funds for the wedding, or the cost of the wedding. And so I couldn't bring myself to go to them. And so I asked my parents to sort of cover what I had owed. You know, it was a rock bottom moment. I just felt so pathetic. I felt like a loser. I felt like, you know, a failure. And so I had all these cards and all these sneakers too. And like, it didn't sort of dawn on me that I could just go ahead and sell those in order to recoup a lot of my losses, because for some sick reason, I felt like I had earned those and those were mine and I could never touch them, right? Because they were like my tangible investments of sorts, or like my alternate assets. And I also had, like, you know, I think a subconscious attachment to them. And so it was really, really hard for me to let go of those. And so after speaking with my parents, I think something sort of sparked, and I realized I can't make my parents touch their retirement funds. I need to sell some cards. And so I ended up finding a buyer who was willing to take a large portion of my collection in bulk and pay me a nice chunk of change. These folks came to my apartment building, assessed my collection, basically appraised it, which was really hard to do because I had a lot of cards. And one of the challenges I felt was going to be having to sell each card individually. But when you can find a bulk buyer, you know, changes circumstances. And so I remember vividly them coming over that Friday night. I was so nervous. I didn't know how that whole process would go. It's my first time making like a major deal like that. And so they came by and assessed the collection. It was a Friday night. They were like, well, you know, we have a show this weekend. They basically, their plan was to take those cards and run them in a live show on an app called Whatnot to basically sell them as repacks. And so they were like, you know, we need to bring the cards back to, you know, our office so that we can get the show started, but we can't pay you in full until next week. And so they ended up going back to their office or home or wherever they came from in Staten Island. I was in Jersey City at the time to go get some cash. They gave me some collateral to hold on to, and they brought back the cash. And all in the meanwhile, I'm sitting there nervously playing live blackjack, because that's what I did. I'm telling myself, oh yeah, I just made back this chunk of change. It was like basically everything I had lost and then some. I can afford to play blackjack right now.
Wow. That's right before the wedding.
Right before the wedding, while these guys are going to fetch the cash for me, I'm sitting there on my phone playing blackjack. And before they could get back, which, you know, took about an hour, hour and a half to get from Jersey City to Staten Island and back on a Friday night, I had lost like 10 grand playing blackjack. And it's just, it's disgusting to think back that, you know, that's how my mind worked. It just worked in such disillusioned, insidious ways that didn't make sense. I had a problem, a real addiction. Fast forward to the wedding, you know, it happened. I took care of it, and I was still gambling, making money back. And you know, we went on our little mini moon and had a great time. And I came back, and I think it was the weekend after, where at this point we had received a lot of money as gifts, right, from the wedding. And I had that set aside in a savings account, and I was gambling again. And I ended up touching that. Something that I never thought a million years I would do, but in that sort of crisis mode when you're on tilt, losing money at a rapid pace, your mind doesn't work as it should. And I started to take money out of that account. And before I knew it, you know, the most of it was gambled away. And at that point, it was like, I got to do something here. This is not okay. And I went to my in-laws and had a really hard conversation with them about everything I had been doing. Obviously, I had, you know, basically come clean to my wife, and she obviously wasn't happy. We were married all of a month. And at that point, you know, my father-in-law was willing to basically float me some money to bail me out of this situation that I had gotten myself in. And I had agreed with them and my family that I would start going to Gamblers Anonymous meetings. This was in December of 2022. And so I found a room in Jersey City, started attending on a weekly basis, but just really wasn't taking it seriously. I was still gambling. I was still buying the cards. I was still actively, you know, just seeking that chase, that high. And it really didn't last very long. I was winning. And then boom, April came and I hit another wall and lost a whole ton of money in a very short stint. And this was the worst one yet. And I remember my wife was away on a bachelorette trip for one of her closest friends. And I had lost the most money I'd ever lost in like a 48-hour window. And I thought it was all over. I really did. I didn't know what to do with myself. I called my dad just in like an absolute state of disarray and told him what had happened. He came and picked me up from my apartment. I went to my parents' house that weekend and I was just paralyzed. I remember being paralyzed all weekend. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to operate. And I knew my wife was going to come back that Monday. And, you know, frankly, I was going to have to tell her everything and come clean again. And that was the first time that I self-excluded. I self-excluded from the gambling and or from the apps. So I couldn't access them anymore. And that's when I pursued Right Choice. And so I started to go to those meetings in addition to the GA. And things started to improve. But, you know, obviously, the road to recovery doesn't end. And there were a lot of ups and downs between now and then. But those were the three moments, I would say, right before the wedding, right after the wedding, and then in April of 2023, that really were probably the toughest times for me in my journey.
Struggling with an addiction can make you feel like you're all alone. But trust me, it doesn't have to be that way. At Right Choice Recovery, a family-owned and operated treatment center in New Jersey, we are here for you, and we're dedicated to helping you break free from addiction and change your life for the better. Whether you're struggling with substances or a gambling addiction, this is the spot for you. With personalized care, real support, and a team that understands exactly what you're going through, we're here to walk with you on your journey to recovery, because recovery is possible. And it all starts with the right choice. Check the description of this video today for more information.
Yeah, I think that the story that you tell resembles the experience of the gambling addict. And it's one that I went through similar types of experiences, as have many of the people that are probably listening to this. What's unique about your story is the way that you continue collecting throughout. And even to this day, you still continue to collect, but it's in kind of a different format maybe than it was back then. Could you talk to the similarities between collecting and traditional forms of gambling, and maybe also the differences?
Absolutely. So when people ask how are sports cards or trading cards like gambling, it's totally a valid question, especially if you haven't been immersed in the modern hobby, right? Mm-hmm. And by the way, we call this sports card hobby the hobby. But once you peel back the layers, the overlap becomes pretty clear. So let's start with breaking, and I brought that up before. Which is one of the most popular formats in the hobby today. So in a typical break, you pay money upfront for a randomized chance to get cards from a sealed box or case, okay? You don't know what team you'll get or what players or cards are inside, and the vast majority of participants walk away with cards that are worth far less than what they actually paid. And so that's almost identical to like buying a lottery ticket or playing a slot machine, right? You're chasing a hit, that one big card that might make it all worth it. But just like in gambling, the odds are stacked up against you, even more so actually, you know, whereas like when you sit down to play blackjack, there's generally a 50-50 chance that you're going to either double your money or lose all your money. But in this case, the odds are stacked up against you even more so. And the house, the breaker or the platform always wins 100% of the time. Then you've got things like fillers, razzes, and you know, minis and micros, they call them, which are just more layers of gambling. You might pay $10 for a 1 in 10 chance at getting into a break. That itself is a gamble, right? It's a gamble within a gamble. It's just risk layered on risk. And the mechanics are designed to keep you hooked. There are things all across these platforms like Whatnot, Fanatics Live, Loop, eBay Live, even on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook, YouTube, other platforms where people are opening the cards. But they have things like countdowns, spinning wheels, randomizers. These are all dopamine triggers. You know, there are things like hit bells and flashing animations and deck of cards where you're basically asking the breaker, which is essentially the dealer, to pull a card out of the deck and that'll be your assigned team. So even the language in the hobby mirrors gambling. You have hit and chase and rip and jackpot and skunked. Mm-hmm. And it's not subtle at all. You know, there's the psychological loop as well, which is the tilt, the sunk cost fallacy, the just one more mentality. So you spend more trying to win back what you've lost or to justify previous losses. So in that case, it's really no different from what we see in casinos or online sports betting. And the scariest part of it all is that, you know, it's being marketed as a childhood hobby, you know, wrapped in nostalgia and pushed heavily to younger audiences and this next generation of collectors. But again, make no mistake, these are gambling-like mechanics. And for people like myself who are vulnerable to addiction, it can spiral fast. So that's what led me to this movement called Collectors MD. You know, ultimately, it's really to call out, raise awareness, and help people navigate it and navigate their collecting journey, their hobby, with intention, support, and honesty.
Yeah, I think it's very needed, especially hearing this idea about younger audiences, because we know that younger people, like people that shouldn't be gambling, are gambling, right? They're getting their accounts from their families. They're using VPNs. There's a plethora of ways that people are gambling.
Sure.
But when it comes to cards, is there even a minimum age? I mean, there might be like a recommended age of, I don't know, 12, but like there's no minimum, right?
There are no age gates. And that's the biggest problem that we see in the hobby today. Anyone, including a 10-year-old or 12-year-old, can download an app on their phone, their parents' phone, link a credit card, sign up for an account, and buy and sell cards and boxes on their own. And we see it all the time. We see these clips, these highlights of people, their kids, you know, on these apps. They shouldn't be, but they are. And they're buying just as much as adults are. I mean, there are also these in-person card shows that happen. Actually, this week is the biggest one of the year. It's called the National in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And you see these young kids, again, I'm talking about like 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds, walking these showroom floors with tens of thousands of dollars worth of cards, wheeling and dealing them to adult distributors and traders. Like, these people are buying and selling cards full time. You see these kids interacting with them, transacting with them as if they're, you know, right at that same playing field as the adults. It's crazy. I mean, a lot of them, I have to hand it to them, are savvy and know their way around a business conversation or transaction. And I think in some ways, maybe it's beneficial that kids are learning how to transact, how to do business at a younger age, but there are just too many sort of slippery slopes within this hobby, layers within layers, that are too dangerous, not just for adults, but especially for kids. And there's no sense of education. The parents don't get it. They don't understand what's going on behind the scenes. They just sort of see their kid, you know, opening Pokemon cards or sports cards as any other kid would, but they're not truly wrapping their heads around the fact that there are all of these gambling-like mechanics that are tied to it. And on top of that, they're vulnerable, they're impressionable. And these platforms and manufacturers unapologetically target these young kids. They don't care, you know, that these kids shouldn't be participating in these sort of activities. They just want the money at the end of the day. And it doesn't matter if it's coming from a 12-year-old or 40-year-old at the end of the day. If they're bringing in the paycheck, or if they're bringing in the dollars, it doesn't matter. It makes no difference. And so it's very, very scary.
Yeah. If, like, practically at a high level, if I'm a parent and I see my kid interested in this kind of stuff, how do I know what the difference is between the gambling and just collecting?
Yeah. That's the hard part. And that's where Collectors MD comes in. We're trying to educate people, not just collectors, not just people who are buying the cards, but parents and family members, so that they can see the warning signs, so they can see the triggers and the red flags that pop up from time to time, to truly understand if somebody is collecting with intention or buying with compulsion or, you know, impulsive spending. And so it's tough. It's tough to really see the difference. But I think a huge part of it is the break culture that exists in today's modern hobby. If somebody is buying into a break on a regular basis, where, you know, they're just doing it for the chase, they're doing it for the rush, and there's really no end in sight, then it's clearly gambling. But if, you know, somebody is being more thoughtful and mindful with their purchases, they're spending within their means, they're spending within their budget, they're buying singles on eBay or card show or something like that, stepping into their local card shop and just buying, you know, a few packs of cards or even a box of cards, and it's just once in a while, and they're not spiraling every time they do and get skunked, then, you know, it's a different conversation. But the lines between collecting and gambling are so incredibly blurry. So again, it's just really, really important that we educate folks so that they understand the nuances and the differences and can spot them, you know, from a mile away when they need to.
Sure. Well, take me through it. How's Collectors MD going to accomplish that? What are you all about?
So I want to take a step back and just talk a little bit about Collectors MD and, you know, what we are, what we do. And so, I am the founder of Collectors MD. I started it in March of 2025, so this year, just 4 months ago. Collectors MD is a peer-led support community focused on the mental, emotional, and financial side of collecting. And we're working with people who love the hobby, but who have also found themselves struggling with things like compulsive spending, chasing, or even addiction-like behaviors, especially in the areas of sports cards, memorabilia, sneakers, TCG. TCG stands for trading card games, so think, you know, Pokemon, Magic the Gathering, things like that, and live breaks. So it really started from my own experience that we just talked about and what I was seeing in this community, in this hobby. And there was sort of this growing overlap between collecting and gambling psychology, and a lot of people were just quietly feeling overwhelmed or out of control or ashamed. And there was really just no safe space to talk about it, right? So many people just felt isolated or like they didn't have anywhere to go. And so I launched Collectors MD to change that, to build a place where people can support one another, share openly, and start collecting more intentionally. So we host weekly meetings. They're anonymous peer support meetings, very similar to Gamblers Anonymous. We put out daily content that includes things like daily reflections, Collector's Spotlight. We have a podcast called The Collector's Compass. I just launched a new video series called Behind the Breaks last week, which I'm really excited about. And we also put out educational content. We've started partnering with organizations like Birch's Health and Gamban to help people access professional resources when they need it. And at the core, our mission is really simple. It's to help people collect with intention instead of compulsion. We're not anti-hobby. We always preach that. We're just trying to create a healthier, more supportive culture where people can still enjoy what they love without losing themselves in the process. And it's grown extremely fast in just a short 4 months. We've had hundreds of people reach out, join our meetings, share their stories, and it's been so powerful to watch. So whether someone needs to completely step away from collecting, abstain completely, or just needs help creating better boundaries around it, we're here to walk that path with them with no judgment and just support.
That's awesome, man. And I always love when people create something that's rooted in their own experience, because I feel like we're always the most qualified to help the person that we used to be. To someone that's watching this and feeling like, hey, maybe they're on that border of collecting's pretty fun, but I'm starting to have some problems, what would you say to them?
So if you're watching this and thinking, you know, this might be me, or I'm starting to spiral or experience something similar. A lot of this happens subconsciously. People don't even realize that they have a problem until it's too late. We just want people to know that they're not alone. You're not weak. You're not broken. You're human. And you're reacting to a system that is literally engineered to keep you hooked. So whether it's sports cards, breaks, or even online shopping, you know, these platforms use the same psychological tactics and triggers as gambling apps and casinos do. So, you know, for a lot of people, it's just not a hobby anymore. It's become a high-speed cycle of chasing, spending, justifying, and regretting. So if you've ever felt that gut punch when the mail comes as a reminder that, you know, you went on a bender 2 weeks ago at 2 a.m. on a Tuesday, Or if you've lied to a loved one about how much you spent, or you're hiding packages, or if you've told yourself this is the last break or this is the last purchase more times than you can count, we understand what you're going through. We get it. And a lot of us have been there. You know, some of us still are. Some of us are still recovering. And frankly, it's a lifelong commitment, just like gambling addiction and recovery to more mainstream things like alcohol and drugs and gambling. It is a lifelong commitment. No, I'm not recovered by any means. I'm still, you know, on my journey. And so, you know, this is all sort of why we started Collectors MD. We're not here to shame you or tell you to quit collecting altogether, unless that's what you want, you know, what you want to do or what you need. We fully support you either way. But we're really just here to offer support, resources, and community for people navigating compulsive collecting, gambling-like behaviors, and the blurry lines between passion and addiction. So if this is resonating with you, if this is hitting home in any capacity, please reach out. Join one of our weekly support meetings. We have a daily group chat that has been incredibly active and just so positive, so that people can stay connected in between these weekly meetings. Or if you just want to listen in, we are open to that too. You can keep your camera off and just listen. We feel like that is just as powerful. So there's no pressure. It's just, you know, we're just trying to spread awareness and let people know that this space exists for you. It's completely free. There's no strings attached. If you want to just come to a meeting just to check it out, that's totally fine. If you feel like it's not for you, you're not, you know, obligated to attend another meeting after that. We just want to be there for people who are also struggling and let people know that they don't have to figure this out alone.
So thanks so much, Alex, for coming on and sharing your story and talking about Collectors MD. If you and the audience want to find out more about what they do, check the description of this video for links to them. And if you want to see another story of someone in recovery from a gambling addiction, check out this video next. Let's keep getting better together, one day at a time.